You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, and welcome to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, in a very nice new Salute to Service hoodie.
Yes.
I love the camouflage on the inside of the hood. You've got the patch, you got the flag.
I mean, you got the breast cancer ribbon, you've got the flag, you've got
it's a Salute to Service ribbon.
Salute to Service ribbon. Yeah. You know, you've got the camo inside
in
the hoodie.
That's the sharpest part of it, I think.
And then I think you've got the, I love how it's a patch, you know, that looks like it's Velcroed onto the hoodie, the same way that you Velcro patches on a uniform.
Sure. And it's kind of a dark gray.
Like anthracite. It's a Nike word.
That's a great word.
It is a Nike word. Say
it again.
And anthracite.
Yeah.
And the inside is soft and cozy.
Okay.
Loving it.
I'm going to take mine. I got mine in a large. I'm going to take it to the team shop since I'm going downtown today. My daughter has a concert today.
Nice.
She's in this thing called Club Rock where they end up singing.
Like the School of Rock, sort of?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, where they learn instruments.
Jack Black. Yeah, yes. In this case, for vocals. So she's going to go down there and sing. The other day I said to her, I was like, are you going to be a WWE, you know, women's champion one day? And she's like, only if my singing career doesn't work out. Like, okay. It's good to have fallbacks. Good to have plans. Matt Wilhelm loves it. The future of America. All right, before we get into today's show, first of all, let's just tell you what you've got coming up on the show. Number one, it's Thursday, so we're going to really get into the Tennessee Titans. Who are they? Who are they going to be? You know, what are the matchups you need to worry about? Who are the players you need to worry about? So we will go ahead and see, you know, who they are. They've got some stars on the defensive side of the ball, some big names on offense as well. Two of the best tackles in the NFL, one of the better tackle combinations. So we'll talk about them. We'll also hear from Frank Wycheck, the former Titans tight end and current color analyst on the Titans radio network.
I feel like we know him, having played the Titans the last 3 years.
Every week, Frank Wycheck. It's good to have him on again. We will also hear from Hugh Jackson at 2:30. Plus, it is Fantasy Football Thursday. So send your start sit questions to me at Nathan Zagura at Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskTFC. That's brought to you, of course, by FanDuel. So that's all the stuff we have lined up for today. We'll look at the offense, the defense, the special teams, et cetera, for both of these squads. But I wanted to start off today with an article that I saw from Albert Breer in the Monday Morning Quarterback today. And in it, he talks a little bit there. First of all, I learned some things in it, but he talks about the Cleveland Browns, their process this offseason, and not only that, but he also talks about what the thought process was with Cody Kessler.
Okay.
And not only with Cody Kessler now, which is interesting, but also coming into the draft. And so here it is, and this is from Monday Morning Quarterback earlier today, published by Albert Breer. And he says, this is one of his four downs. Cleveland is coming back. And I quote, Browns coaches knew coming into 2016 that they probably wouldn't finish the season with a parade, but the dearth of talent they inherited made the challenge stiffer than they might have imagined back in the spring. Thus far, behind Hugh Jackson, that challenge has been met. Winning would be nice, of course, but based on where they are, improvement and continued fight is probably more important for a group that's well aware this won't be an overnight rebuild. Said, if you want to kill him for passing on Wentz, that's fine, but let's take a look at Cody Kessler, who had a good shot to play this week after a strong showing early against New England. So he goes in, and this is what he had to say about Cody Kessler. As I understand it, the staff sees Kessler as having made a very strong case to keep the job regardless of the health of the other quarterbacks for the rest of the year, something I've been advocating. You've talked about it as well. It also means that when and if Robert Griffin III gets healthy, he may not go back in. That makes sense because the coaches became smitten with Kessler before drafting him. This is new stuff. This stuff hasn't come out yet. During his pre-draft visit to Cleveland, the ex-USC star's ability to consume and then disseminate information was particularly impressive. The Browns actually had him as the top quarterback on their board going into day two of the draft.
Wow.
So that means anybody who was in the first round.
Name some of those guys who were left.
It's everybody.
So it was Goff and Wentz.
And Lynch.
And Lynch. And everyone else.
Everybody else.
That's Dak, Cody Connor Kessler, Cook. Connor Cook, Cardale Jones.
Jacoby Brissett,
Kevin Hogan.
Yes.
Gotcha.
But Cook would probably be the biggest name of those ones. But yeah, so that's, they liked him that much. So that's interesting. So the Browns had him. The team is carrying 20 rookies or first-year players on its 53, 17 dressed. And in that bloated group, the work of Emmanuel Ogba, Carl Nassib, Derek Kindred, Tracy Howard, Brian Boddy Calhoun, receivers Corey Coleman, and Ricardo Lewis have given the staff reason to believe that going in on a franchise overhaul was the right move. Now they just need time. And we all know that's far from guaranteed in Cleveland, but there's reason here for ownership to stick with Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, and Hugh Jackson and what they are trying to build, even if it hasn't shown up in the left-hand column yet. So some national
nice
praise
words
for what the Browns are doing there from Albert Breer, who obviously owes nothing to this organization, but some nice words there. And, you know, I've seen from Cody Kessler, and the funny thing is, I'm just going to throw out a couple stats for you right now, Mr. Wilhelm.
Go ahead. That is your forte.
I like to do that. Okay. Just tell me. I'm going to
give you stats. No.
I'm going to give you player A and player B. Okay. Just player A.
Is this almost like name guess the stats with Gibbs?
Player A and player B. Okay. It could be similar to that. Okay. I'll do A, B, C, and D. Okay. You ready? Here's player A. Player A, 69% completion.
Okay.
8 yards an attempt. 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
Okay.
69%, 8 yards an attempt, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Okay. Player B, 67% completions, 7.5 yards per attempt, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception. Player C. One second. Bear with me here, folks. Technical difficulties. All right. Player C, 62% completions, 6.7 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Okay. And player D, we're going to go even deeper than this. Player D.
Oh, geez. You're going to E?
We might go to E. We might even get to F.
Whoa.
67% completions, 6.5 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Okay.
I know who that is.
Okay. Player E, 56% completions.
Yikes.
6.3 yards per attempt, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
I think I know who that is.
Okay. Player F.
Okay.
67% completions, 8 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And here's the last one for you.
Jeez.
67% completions, 6 yards per 8 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm going to do one more for you.
Six TDs, 3 interceptions. INT.
Yep.
Okay.
Here's the last one. 61% completions, 6.5 yards per attempt.
Okay.
7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. So. Quarterback A, just so we'll put a name to him now.
Quarterback A, 69%, 8 yards, 4 TDs, 0 interceptions.
Dak Prescott. Quarterback A is Dak Prescott. All right, okay. Quarterback B.
Okay. 67%, 7.5, 7 TDs, 1 interception.
Carson Wentz.
Okay.
Quarterback C.
62%, 6.7, 2 TDs, 1 interception.
Paxton Lynch. Quarterback D is Cody Kessler.
And I knew that.
That was 67%.
67%, 6.5, 2 TDs, 1 interception. Okay. See the CK?
Yep.
It was there.
Quarterback E,
56%, 6.3, 9 TDs, 3 interceptions. Who's that?
Aaron Rodgers.
You're correct. I was correct on those. Those are my two guesses.
Yep. Okay. And F?
And F is 67, 8 TDs, 8 yards per completion, 5 touchdowns, 2 touchdowns.
Andy Dalton.
2 INT, sorry.
Andy Dalton. Similar numbers, match up well with Kessler.
Okay.
Then you've got G.
G, 67%, 8 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
Trevor Siemian, although most of that came in one game.
Yep.
And then the last one.
H, 61%, 6.5 yards per completion, 7 TDs, but 6 interceptions.
Blake Bortles.
Okay.
All right, here, I'll get throw one more out there and see if you can guess who this one is.
All right.
58% completions, 6 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
I'm going to go Eli Manning.
That is Brock Osweiler.
Brock Osweiler. Right, that was my next guess.
Okay.
You know what? I knew Manning has 5 touchdowns for the year, so that was a bad guess.
Well, it's still okay. But nonetheless, so when you look at those numbers, when you don't put a name to the face, and even when you get into quarterback rating, it stands out there. If Cody Kessler, if the Browns were winning at the rate that Dallas or Philadelphia were winning, or at the rate that the Denver Broncos were winning with quarterbacks who basically have the same numbers and are getting all kinds of praise, Cody Kessler would be being thought of much differently nationally.
Sure.
Just from a stat standpoint and an efficiency standpoint. And look, it's not like he's picking up these points in garbage time. They were in 2 competitive games with Miami and Washington. And then he got knocked out early after a nice drive. He was 5 of 8 for 62 yards. So Cody Kessler is actually playing pretty well. And the guys that I include in there, 2 guys that are quote-unquote franchise quarterbacks, Blake Bortles and Brock Osweiler, are significantly worse.
And Andy Dalton.
Right now. Andy Dalton's around the same. It's similar.
He's exactly the same.
Basically
almost.
The same.
Correct.
So he's doing a better job than I believe some people actually think. And I know that there are the physical limitations there on that deep ball. But Cody Kessler's shown something. And you go back to that touchdown against New England. And I talked with Hugh Jackson this morning, and you'll get to see this tonight at 7 o'clock on the Hugh Jackson Show on News Channel 5. Breaking down that play, the play that was called that was a touchdown to Andrew Hawkins was he had an option. It was a pass play that came in, but if they got a certain look, it was going to be checked to a run play.
Right.
They get out there, and the look they were hoping for was a double team on Terrell Pryor so that Hawk could work that arrow route, which is that corner route in the end zone. And so they came out. Kessler saw the safety. Devin McCourty cheated over to Terrell Pryor's side, correctly made the right read.
This is what they expected.
And went to Andrew Hawkins. And so he said that was perfect. That was the play call we wanted. We got the defensive look that we wanted and hoped we would get. And Cody made the right read, the right throw. And that is what you want to see. And so he was very pleased with what Cody Kessler has shown from a mental standpoint, taking care of the football, et cetera. So I just think when, you know, you look at it, a lot of people are saying Josh McCown should be in there, and I love Josh McCown. But I think given where we are, I don't know that he gives you that much of a better chance to win than Cody Kessler. Because you could make the case that Cody Kessler should have 2 victories under his belt on the road. Now, of course, they didn't happen, and moral victories don't count for anything. But Cody Kessler himself was part of the solution, not part of the problem, in the game against Miami and also in the game against Washington. And unless he came out, no quarterback was going to go, I don't think, blow for blow with Tom Brady in that game against us.
Right.
Because they still threw the ball, but they were not being as aggressive in putting the foot on the gas in that second
Now,
half.
Barring the, I'd say, first drive or 2 against the Miami Dolphins, which is his first NFL experience in live game action, this game has not looked too big for Cody Kessler outside
Correct.
Of that first drive or 2, where he looked nervous, a little rattled, just needed to get a little comfortable, and it was self-admitted by Hugh Jackson, and also self-admitted by Cody Kessler himself. After that, it goes back to, you know, when people talk about the Super Bowl, oh, are you so nervous? It's like when you're nervous for about 5 or 7 minutes, and then when the game starts and the bullets are flying, you don't have time to be nervous. You just go and you react. And I think that's a lot of what I'm sure Hugh Jackson liked in Cody Kessler and Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry and these guys that really dove in to understand who Cody Kessler was.
And so my point is, and again, I'm not saying that Cody Kessler is the end-all be-all. That's not what I'm saying at all, or that you found your franchise quarterback. What I am saying is compared to some of the other rookies or first-year starters or even guys that are quote-unquote considered to be franchise quarterbacks, Cody Kessler has done a heck of a job. Pro Football Focus does their own quarterback rating. So it basically is built off of the true quarterback rating, and then they make adjustments for it. There are, when you look at that quarterback rating, the top guys are up in the high 90s. Then there's a strong group from number 10 to the top half of the league, right? Number 10 to number 16. You want to know who those quarterbacks are?
Sure.
Number 9. 9 is Andy Dalton. 10 is Matt Stafford. These guys are all right next to each other.
Franchise quarterback. Go ahead.
Drew Brees is 11.
Franchise quarterback.
Dak Prescott. Trevor Siemian.
Okay.
Carson Wentz. Andrew Luck. Cody Kessler. Those are the guys. Who's Cody Kessler ahead of on this list? Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith, Tyrod Taylor, Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, Eli Manning, Cam Newton right now, Marcus Mariota, Aaron Rodgers, who's off to a little bit of a struggle, as we saw the 56%, Jameis Winston, Brock Osweiler,
I know why he's struggling.
Blake Bortles, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So when you look at Cody Kessler, he is actually doing a pretty good job. They have another stat that is called quarterback adjusted completion percentage. And what was the thing that the Browns praised Cody Kessler for coming out?
Accuracy.
Accuracy. This is quarterback adjusted completion percentage. So it takes away its completions, drops get counted as completions, and then it eliminates throwaway spikes, bad passes, hit is thrown. So it's the same for everybody in the league. Number one in the NFL in adjusted completion percentage is Cody Kessler at 81%, which is the same accuracy percentage he had in college.
Correct.
Number two, Carson Wentz, 79%. Three, Russell Wilson. Four, Jimmy Garoppolo. So that's where he has been good in terms of his accuracy. Where he needs to improve is down the field, not a factor throwing the football down the field this year. Complete non-factor is Cody Kessler. But let's go another measure for quarterbacks. Under pressure. This measures accuracy percentage under pressure. Do you know who the top quarterback is?
Under pressure?
Yes. 85.7% accuracy for all the quarterbacks who have at least 80 attempts.
Carson Wentz?
80 dropbacks. Cody Kessler, 85.7. Number two, Derek Carr. Number three, Russell Wilson. Carson Wentz is eighth. Dak Prescott is ninth.
Where's Marcus Mariota on that list?
Marcus Mariota is 25th.
Okay.
55%. So that is tremendous what he has done under pressure. Okay? He's 23 of 36 under pressure. His completion percentage is 63.9%.
Which puts him where?
Second in the NFL behind only Sam Bradford. Second in the NFL behind only Sam Bradford. When you think about these things, these are very impressive numbers for Cody Kessler. Again, I just think had the Browns as a whole been winning and doing better, Cody Kessler is getting more praise than nationally than I believe that he is right now.
I agree with that.
It's just kind of part of it is his environment, and they're losing, and it's Cody Kessler. But what he has done has been rather impressive. And for a guy that when we came out of that fourth preseason game, you know, I don't know that anybody without the last name Kessler or maybe coaches who drafted him or were responsible for him being here believed that Cody Kessler could come out and put up those kind of numbers and look that competent. Let's not forget, Cody Kessler has not – played one snap with Corey Coleman yet this year.
Right.
Who had five catches for 106 yards and two touchdowns with Josh Kemp. He hasn't had the benefit of Corey
Coleman. See, and I think as much as you're going on and on about Cody Kessler himself, I feel, and this is not a bad thing, Cody Kessler is the sum of the hard work of Cody Kessler,
yep,
of Hugh Jackson, of Pep Hamilton.
Yep.
And I think even furthermore, of Kirby Wilson as well and their ability to create a dominant running game plan as well to take some of that pressure off of Cody Kessler. And I think it's a small sample size, but it's small for some of these other guys who've been playing year after year who have, you know, multiple seasons as a franchise quarterback, but yet this is only through five games for a lot of these guys. Some of them four in Aaron Rodgers' case because they've already had their bye. So my point is, It can tip two ways. Either Cody Kessler eventually, when given the full gamut of the playbook, will get exposed for what we thought Cody Kessler was. Or Cody Kessler continues to be the sum of all the offensive minds they've put around a guy like Cody Kessler.
Yeah. And my point with this is not that Cody Kessler is a franchise quarterback.
Correct.
I think right now Cody Kessler looks like a guy that can be a very, very good backup spot starter for you, but maybe can he hit that Andy Dalton level?
Right, and even furthermore is if Albert Breer and some of these national guys are taking notice and taking an optimist approach to what the Browns are doing at 0-5, just imagine had we won the Dolphins game and, say, the Ravens game or the Dolphins game and we finished out Washington without those turnovers in the third quarter and we continue to pull away and we sit at 2-3 like the Titans, like the Colts, you know, like some of these other teams who just haven't got off to the start that they wanted, right, and you lose the games you might expected to have lost to, which is to the New England Patriots and maybe to the Eagles, who are playing better than everybody thought they would play. Carson Wentz playing better than anybody thought he would play.
Absolutely.
How different would the national narrative be on the Browns collectively and Cody Kessler individually had things played out completely the same, but you win two of those three football games that were snatched out of our grasp, well, essentially that we gave away, I'll say.
Yeah. And that's what the kind of point I was trying to make.
Right.
Yes. He is only can, you know, do what he can, but at the same time, you know, he's the quarterback, and win-loss, while it's not a quarterback set, that's how that they are measured. I do think that he has done better than I think the average perception of Cody Kessler.
He's done better than I ever perceived he would have done.
For sure. When we come back, weigh in, 216-578-0850, Frank Wycheck at 1:30 here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. If you have a serious work-related injury, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Hopefully we have more clarity by tomorrow on what the Browns' offensive line is going to look like. We just don't know exactly what's going to happen there with the injury to Joel Bitonio and the shuffling. But let's go ahead and dip into this Tennessee Titans team, and we'll tell you about who they're going to be facing on the other side of the football in this one. So for the starters, probable starters for the Titans on defense, when you look at this group up front, it's big, it's physical, and that's what gives me a little bit of concern for this team. And that starts, obviously, with Jarrell Casey. The guy is an absolute beast. But let's go start on their defensive line. Defensive end, Daquan Jones. Nose tackle, Angelo Blackson. And defensive tackle, Jarrell Casey. They play a 3-4 in that Dick LeBeau vein. And Jarrell Casey is the guy that is the star. Pro Bowler last year. He's been a second-team All-Pro. A very, very good player, a disruptive force on the season already, Matt. 2 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, 9 quarterback pressures, which for a 3-4 end is a pretty productive start to his season.
It really is, and I think that's where when you dive into actually who's going to start for us, you really want to know who's going to be combo blocking on these guys, because you just can't single block a guy like Jarrell Casey, and I thought we saw that a little bit in week one with a guy like Fletcher Cox, who you won't call his name for a quarter or maybe a half of football, but then 3-4 ends, production kind of comes in clusters.
Yep.
And I thought we saw that in, you know, with Fletcher Cox in the third quarter and beyond. He got a sack, you know, he some tackles for a loss, or he just becomes a pain for you to block offensively, and you have to dedicate more attention to him. So then you start getting a double team, and you're chipping up to those linebackers, and then you look at the linebackers that they have. You know, Wesley Woodard is a good player, Avery Williamson. Both of these guys are small, quick, athletic linebackers that scrape to the football. And going even furthermore, you look at what Lawrence Timmons has been able to do with the Steelers, drafted originally by Dick LeBeau when he was there. Ryan Shazier and the player that he is for the Steelers. Cover, athletic guys that can run. And I think this, to me, from a defensive line standpoint, because that's where our focus is, these guys know their job, and they chew up those offensive linemen and allow those linebackers to scrape and make plays.
They do. And Angelo Blackson, the nose tackle, he's 6'4", 318 in his second year out of Auburn. He's got 2 tackles for a loss and a quarterback pressure on the season. Daquan Jones, 7 tackles, 1 tackle for loss and a pressure. But they have another defensive lineman who's rotated in, Carl Klug, 6th year out of Iowa, who's having a very good season. 14 tackles, 1 sack, 8 quarterback pressures. When you look at the snaps, Casey's been on the field for 237 defensive snaps. Klug, 143. Daquan Jones, 183. Blackson, only 88. So it's really been the trio that's been on the most, Daquan Jones, Klug, and Jarrell Casey. They've played well, and at Pro Football Focus, in terms of 3-4 defensive ends, Klug's ranked 4th overall on the season. Casey is ranked 5th overall, so they have been very productive up front. You talked about the linebackers. on the outside. You have two guys who are very good at getting the quarterback, two veterans, Derek Morgan from Georgia Tech, a veteran, two sacks, five quarterback pressures already. On the other side, it's Arakpo, the former first-round pick who's been very, very good in Tennessee. Already six sacks, three tackles for loss, 14 quarterback pressures, one pass is defensed, and on the season, he has graded out as the number eight overall outside linebacker in a 3-4 this year, Morgan 20th. So this is a front seven that is very good. And you talked about Woodyard leads the team right now. Or I'm sorry, Williamson leads the team right now with 57 tackles already in five games. He's got two tackles for loss, an interception, a pass defense. Woodyard himself, three tackles for loss and 21 tackles on the season. So Woodyard, is he playing more of the thumper role then, and Williamson's more kind of cleaning up, even though he's the bigger, or is it the opposite?
It's the opposite. Okay. And I think in this case, and every 3-4 defense is a little bit different, where in Wade Phillips' system, the weak inside linebackers, the tackling machine, and the Mike backer, I think a lot like ours, DeMario Davis is the more thumping, physical linebacker. And in this case, you can just look at the makeup of these guys. You got Williamson, 6'1", 246. And then you Woodard at 233, a smaller guy who's going to be a heck of a lot more athletic, giving up those 13 pounds. So he's going to be the scraping, playmaking guy. But in this case, they funnel their tackles to Williamson. And then that's the same way when you know, people go, well, how can you do that? And you look at, say, the Carolina Panthers, for example. Everything the defensive line does is to keep everything inside and allow the great player Luke Kuechly, who lines up at 5 yards, 5.5 yards, sometimes even 6 yards, diagnoses plays faster than I think I've seen in a long time, like Ray Lewis. Yep. And his ability to get to be around the football every time because of the amount of time that he studied and the great instincts he has as a linebacker. They hammer or keep everything inside and allow Ray Lewis, or in that case, Luke Kuechly, to run the alleys and make plays either downhill or, you know, inside the tackles. It's never really made on the edge, expected to stretch. And I think in this case, that's how they're funneling their tackles to Williamson.
And they certainly are doing that. He had 137 tackles last year, already 57 on the season this year. As we take a look at the secondary, this is where there is some room to attack. Parrish Cox is struggling this season. You got Denoris Searcy, Rashad Johnson are your two safeties, and Jason McCourty, probably their top corner so far. Already two picks and eight passes defensed on the season. McCourty likely to draw the assignment if they have him fall. We'll ask Frank Wycheck about that in just a second. Likely to follow Terrell Pryor.
Yeah. Really no threat. And I think they, meaning the Tennessee Titans defensive backfield, might look to the Cleveland Browns minus Terrell Pryor and his production through the first five football games and might say not a whole lot of threat on their side. So this is kind of like a wash. And as you said, Jason McCourty going to follow Terrell Pryor potentially. And then it's forced to Parrish Cox and Johnson and Searcy, as well as Hollywood Higgins, Andrew Hawkins, to be able to – who's going to win those battles? And I think that's where Cody Kessler, Josh McCown, whoever plays quarterback for us, becomes an advantage if we can make those plays.
Well, we're going to get a take on the Titans from a man who knows them very well. Frank Wycheck will be with us when we come back. I know we got some people on the phone lines. We will get to them as soon as we're done with Frank Wycheck. So hang on. We'll get to you. Frank Wycheck from Tennessee Titans coming up next right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Very happy to be going to the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now. OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns, who know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com today. And we welcome in our guest right now, Frank Wycheck, former Titans tight end, current color analyst on the Titans radio network. And it seems like we get to do this every year with you, Frank. Thanks for being with us here on CBD.
No problem. Great to be with you guys.
Frank, when you look at this Titans team, they are running the football very effectively. The defense top 10 in terms of yards allowed. What would you say are the strengths of the Titans through five games?
Well, at first, it's obviously their offensive line and the running backs. The way they set this thing up with John Robinson coming in and along with Mike Mularkey and the new offensive staff, they really wanted to commit to be a power running downhill smash mouth type of offense. And they really have done that. They drafted that way. They hired Russ Grimm to retool this offensive line and to teach it better. And you're seeing the results of it. They're really committed to the run. It's one of those things when you're a player that you always know you go back to your strengths if things are going sideways. And I think they're realizing that their strength is when they hand the ball off to DeMarco Murray or Derrick Henry, that, that's a really good thing. So, I think that's the biggest strength on their team right now, along with Marcus and that defensive front, who is really getting better each and every week and being more productive.
A lot of people have said that Marcus Mariota got off to a little bit of a slow start, but, you know, handing the football off and creating play-action passes is becoming a strength from him. Is he coming on strong and finally developing in this Mike Mularkey system?
I think he is. I think he's a very unique player. I don't think they have the right – I mean, they have, you know, good personnel outside with the wide receivers, but they don't have a dynamic kind of speedster that can get over the top of the defense, and that's limiting their passing game. They have to be creative in a lot of ways to get production out of that passing game, and obviously it starts with Delanie Walker. He's their big play guy. The other guys are good. They're young and they're just establishing that relationship. But it seems like Marcus, and the way they game plan, he's getting better. And hopefully he stays consistent and doesn't turn the ball over, which has been a problem for him this year.
Talking with Frank Wycheck, former Titans tight end and their current color analyst on the Titans radio network. Frank, you talked about Delanie Walker. I think he's one of the better players in the NFL that doesn't necessarily get the proper hype around him that he should. Basically carry that passing attack last year, leading receiver again this year, and he's taking on a Browns team that has struggled to stop tight ends. You might want to suit up and get another paycheck because the Browns have given up the most catches, yards, and touchdowns to tight ends so far this season. But let's talk about Delanie. What makes him so effective?
Well, he's not Rob Gronkowski or Martellus Bennett or any of those guys. Even the guy that you have, Barnage, who's a really nice player. He's kind of a shorter, kind of more compact, very strong, very understanding of route concepts and spacing, and really catches the ball well. And his run after catch is really good as well. So they could do a lot of things with Delanie. He can run by you, he can run over you, and he makes the tough catches, over across the middle and in a red zone when those plays are most important. So yeah, they lean on Delanie. And I'm sure Ray Orton knows him very well. That. He'll have probably played some in and out with him to take him away.
Frank, when we look at this Titans defense, it's obviously coached by Dick LeBeau, so there's always going to be production and playmakers. But just talk about the addition of Brian Arakpo last year via unrestricted free agency. 7 sacks last year, has 6 thus far through 5 football games. And the play of inside linebacker Avery Williamson, drafted in the 5th round, came in very productive as a rookie. 137 tackles last year and leading the team right now with 57 tackles.
Yeah, I mean, that front seven's really playing well. Avery Williamson and Woodyard in the middle and those well linebackers in the 3-4. And then you have Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo on the outside, and they play a lot of snaps, and their motor is always running. They're very quick off the edges. They turn the corner. They understand, how to – they have secondary moves that they put on offensive tackles, and then you kind of add Jarrell Casey and Carl Klug, and and Jones and Blackson and Austin Johnson, a rookie in there in the middle that, you know, really worked together in their pass rush. And last week it really busted out. It wasn't fair because the Dolphins had a bunch of cones up there as offensive linemen. So I think anyone could have gotten the production last week. But, yeah, they're a tough group to handle.
When you talk about this receiving core, we talked about Delanie Walker, but the receivers really haven't stepped up. And I want to ask you about something that, you know, on the surface seemed curious when you have a guy with the size and the speed of Dorial Green-Beckham so young. What happened with Dorial Green-Beckham? Why was he jettisoned to Philadelphia?
Well, I think John Robinson wants certain types of players, and I think it all begins with work ethic, a team-first attitude, and I think it turned out to be that, you know, he wasn't a John Robinson guy. You know, I think he's got, you know, obviously has the physical talent. I don't know if he exactly, you know, studied as much as he should have to try to excel and be better at the position. But that was coming from last year when Malarkey, you know, took over and, you know, he saw him for a full year with the team. So, he was just a guy that had that physical talent, but, just for whatever reason, he wasn't fitting in with what John Robinson was building. And that's what it's a prerequisite for every player on this team that you have to be a team first, unselfish guy who's going to, you know, work hard and give your teammates the best chance to win.
With the receivers that are left, Tajay Sharpe was the rookie fifth rounder who was supposed to be kind of the leader of this group, and he's done so in terms of receptions but not yards. Rishard Matthews brought in, the free agent. You still got Kendall right there, but the receiving position still seems to be a mystery despite a lot of investment by the Titans, whether it was Justin Hunter back in the day, Kendall Wright with the first-round pick, Green Beckham in the second round. It still seems to be kind of a mystery. How's that receiving group shaking out in your opinion?
Well, they got a Hall of Famer on the group.
And Andre Johnson. That's right.
And Andre Johnson.
Who just catches touchdowns right now. That's about it.
He's great in the red zone. I mean, the Titans were the only team to give him a shot, and he's give the Titans a shot in the arm. Listen, he's not the Andre Johnson, of his younger days, but he can still be very effective. He blocks very well. He's almost as big as he's bigger than Delanie Walker, but he blocks well for them in the run game, and that's why they had some nice long runs. But you're right, as the receivers as a whole, and we are all up here talking about it as well, is that it's just an inconsistent group. I think just there hasn't been a lot of time. The relationship hasn't been there. I think they need to work more together. I think they need to be Peyton Manning and get these guys out in the passing tree before games and run these routes so they get on the same page. But as I said earlier, there's no guys they have that can run by you and beat you. And that's limited them in the passing game. And when you have that, you better be a great route runner and create separation, or these guys are just going to squat and drive, and you're going to have a lot of contested passes. So that's the struggles that they're going through with this group. They're hoping to get Kendall Wright going. He's kind of a dynamic player in that slot, but he's been slowed with a hammy, and he really hasn't gotten back on track yet.
Sure. And Frank, last question for me, and just talk about the mentality of that football team sitting at 2-3, but yet still very much so in the mix in the AFC South, which has been up and down between, you know, Houston playing well one week and not the next, and, you know, Indy and Andrew Luck really not getting off. Defense playing well, and we know who they are offensively. Is the mentality that they just need to kind of continue to stay in tune with the plan each and every week, go out and win football games, and when they look up, they could very well be ahead and be leading that division on their way to the playoffs?
Yeah, you're right, dude. They're a team that has a great attitude, a great work ethic. They don't sulk. They don't make excuses when they lose, but they they really want to win bad, and it's a really good group of guys. There's obviously some weak spots there, but I think for this team, it's about Cleveland this week. It really is. I mean, they got to win a home game that's not Jacksonville. And you know, I'm saying this, that they got to start winning at home. They have a nice opportunity these next 3 weeks against Cleveland and Indy and Jacksonville to get three home wins and to really start that thing going, because that can get contagious and the fans will start feeding off it. And there's nothing like playing home. Jeff Fisher used to tell us that we need to win all our home games and then win half our road games, and we're in the playoffs, easy peasy. So they just haven't been able to win at home for whatever reason. So they need to start to get one win against Cleveland this week.
Is there something personal with this Titans team, with the Browns, who have beaten them in each of the last two seasons, including the largest road come from behind victory in NFL history? Is that something that is that present in that locker room right now, that, hey, everybody talks bad about the Browns, but they've beaten us each of the last 2 years. We need to do something about that.
Sure. I think they know it, that they're not, believe me, maybe some other teams would take them lightly. The Titans aren't good enough yet to take a team lightly. And they know that, going in, they've lost the last 2 years to this team. They're well coached. They're a gritty team. These guys get paid too. They're very talented, and it hasn't worked out for them at the quarterback position so far. But I think this team's going to be ready to play. I don't think they're going to have a young quarterback in there or whoever, that it's going to be an easy game. They need to take control of the game just like they did last week against the Dolphins, and just be more consistent. And I think they're the better team, and they should win.
It will be interesting to see. So you think a Titans victory this Sunday, and why not? I think their defense is unheralded. I think they're better than their record. I think a lot of people forget that if it weren't for a couple turnovers, really the pick six against Minnesota, this is a Titans team that could have beaten the only unbeaten team in the National Football League.
No, you're right. There's a couple of mistakes. A fumble for a return for a touchdown, two defensive touchdowns in that game. They shut down Adrian Peterson. He was had 31 yards rushing.
Yep.
That was a game. Kind of just one of those things where you could have had it, and they'd had. It's kind of in the Raiders game as well. So this team's hungry to win at their stadium, and it'll be a raucous atmosphere at the Nissan Stadium on Sunday. But if this team expects to take that next step, they got to beat the Browns. There's no disrespect to the Browns, but they got to beat the Browns.
And then they've got Indianapolis and Jacksonville up after that, so an opportunity to do something in the division. Frank, appreciate the time and the analysis, and we'll see you Sunday in Nashville.
All right. Have a safe trip. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Frank Wycheck, former Titans tight end legend, and now he is on their radio call as the color analyst on the Titans radio network, talking about the importance of this game for Tennessee. And it is a big game for this Tennessee Titans team to get back to .500 before they have two divisional games. This is their first of three games in a row at home. 216-578-0850. We'll get to your calls and wrap up this first hour when we return here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm with you. Let's go to the phone lines now. Steve in Brunswick is with us. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Steve?
Just comment on Cody Kessler. I mean, I think you're right. You're reading the numbers there, and I think he's played well. I don't think he's been the problem for the team. Now, he's always going to have an arm strength issue, and that's not just throwing the ball deep. It's when it gets colder and it gets windy.
Driving the ball.
Driving the ball. And, every rookie struggles with this, which I would pound into a quarterback's head, is ball security within the pocket. It's such an overlooked thing because, as Matt knows, them defensive guys, they're coming for that ball when they're close to that quarterback. You have to be you know, secure with the ball inside the pocket when, you know, it gets cluttered around you. But, you know, the play he got hurt on, I don't know if the line was supposed to call the, you know, the protection or he missed the protection. I don't know what happened there. But the play looked like it was going to be a backwards pass in the end zone anyway.
No, it was supposed to be a screen. It just didn't get a chance to develop.
But he was so far back. I don't even know what that play was. Well, I watched it again. The line all went to the one side. I'm like, what just happened?
Right. And on a lot of screens, you invite – some of those defensive linemen to just keep coming in. Usually most screens, you block one side and one side sneaks out, and that's the side that kind of invites. So I think what happened there, it was the second time they brought Dante Hightower on almost the same blitz, you know, through the gap, and that becomes an unaccounted for hat. And again, him hitting on the run from about 3 yards of depth came faster than Cody Kessler could actually decipher really what to do with the football, which is why it just randomly, you know, flew out of his hands and became a backward pass. But when you run a successful screen, you invite, and that's why a lot of times the best screens come on downs where you anticipate a blitz, where the defense is losing defenders that are running into the offensive backfield. Those linemen let those frontline guys and the blitzers a lot of times go and get up into the defensive backfield, who are covering guys down the field. You toss it right over their heads to a running back who's kind of, you know, squirreled his way out into the flats or on a middle screen in the middle of the field. You give it to him, and there's nothing but your players in front of him. Yep. And it's like a wave.
That's exactly what it is.
In this case, Dante Hightower was the unaccounted for hat, not anticipating that blitz, I'm sure, or coming that clean. And he just had a head of steam and I think caught Cody Kessler off guard, which entailed to the reaction of him to get rid of the football in any way, shape, or form. But in that case, it was, as I mentioned, it was a backward pass.
And he got hit. It was a total busted play from the get-go. You can't let a guy come right up the A-gap untouched to the quarterback. It happened twice on the first possession as well, but Kessler was able to get away and throw the ball away. Can't have that happening. Gary and Rocky River, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man. How are you doing?
I keep hearing how good of a coach Hugh Jackson is. When exactly is this supposed to transpire? Because over the course of the first five games, he's been completely outcoached in every game, every facet, and he's been embarrassed in half of them. To take Cody Kessler in the third round, this guy's a quarterback guru, right? And he passes on Wentz. What it tells me very simply is he's out of his league. He doesn't know what he's doing. Bring in Bill Polian. Jimmy, please bring in somebody that recognizes NFL talent, because you does not. Go Browns.
All right. I mean, if you want to get mad at them for the Wentz thing, that's fine. Cody Kessler has played very well and has looked like an NFL quarterback. As to his point about the Browns being outcoached in every game, I would say that is totally false, and I would say that the strategies employed against both the Redskins and it's hard to say in this game because when Cody Kessler got knocked out, that changes things with Charlie Whitehurst. But the strategies employed in the game against the Ravens, very effective. Against the Miami Dolphins, using Terrell Pryor, shocking the world with that. That's good coaching. Getting young guys up and ready to play quickly, like Breann Body Calhoun, Cam Johnson, Corey Lemonnier, that happens from good coaching.
Correct.
So I think the coaching here is excellent. I think if there's one thing to be confident in going forward, it's the coaching of the Cleveland Browns. Right now, does their talent need to kind of get up and get, you know, to the level of the other places? Yeah, but they're young, as Albert Breer pointed out. But I think everybody would agree around the league that the one thing that this team is very well coached.
Yeah, and I would say when you look at who we are each and every Sunday, which is significantly different from one Sunday to the next, at the quarterback position, at the wide receiver position, at the defensive line position, at the offensive line position, I think we are doing, our coaching staff is doing the most with the least. And I think nationally, any analyst will probably tell you that. There was already a significant deficiency from a talent aspect with the Cleveland Browns. If we had RG3 and Corey Coleman, you know, you start getting out of some of those conversations if you had Josh Gordon come back week five, but that's not true. So we're going out there playing competitive football in most cases, in almost every football game, with the least talent in the league had we been completely healthy, and we're not even close to being completely healthy. multiple starters, 3 to 5 starters in every football game has been on the inactive list, not as a healthy scratch, but as an injured player for this football team.
I mean, this team's gone through the fact they've 5 different quarterbacks have played. You know, you're shuffling around your offensive line every week, and yet this team has been competitive. Have they won? No. Is that the bottom line? Absolutely. And that's where they need to get. But I think if you want to complain about talent evaluation, that's one thing. I would say that, if anything, they've been proven more to be right about Cody Kessler, because I don't think anybody thought Cody Kessler could play at all. And at least he's gone out there and been competent. Yes, they missed on Wentz. They didn't like Wentz. But we'll have to evaluate that when it's all said and done, when you look at all the players that Carson Wentz, by trading that pick, turned into. And then still, it will be incumbent upon them to get their quarterback, in addition to Cody Kessler, to get another quarterback either in 2017 or 2018. And I say absolutely in 2017, because you cannot wait anymore at the most important position in all of professional sports, period. All right, we're going to kick off our second hour. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Titans offense. Jamie Meter expected to join us in studio as well. Also, a couple of quick updates for you. We'll have Hugh Jackson's press conference at 2:30. Cody Kessler is expected to start Sunday for the Browns. Cam Irving is expected to return Sunday for the Browns and start at center as well, with John Greco moving back to right guard, Alvin Bailey going to left guard following the injury to Joel Bitonio. We'll have the full press conference, though, from Hugh Jackson for you at 2:30 here on CBD.